Initially, this is an offshoot or a culmination of a dream that I've had as a recurring dream over the years, and it's been pretty much the same, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but it's got me thinking a lot about the subject of faith in the latter days, and in particular my faith. So I'm going to just go over some things on faith that we've heard before, but maybe just look at it and try and make it a little bit more real for us. Now, I spend a lot of time at night time awake, and my brain goes 100 miles an hour, and this is one of the subjects that my brain has been engaged on at night time. Now, we know a little bit about faith. We're told a lot about it in Scripture, and we think we know something about it until we think really deeply about it. And hopefully what I'm going to say will just sort of make it a little bit more real for us, especially nearing the time of the end. Now, we know about faith, and it's possible to have a blind faith. It's something that we practice pretty much every day. You know, we buy food from the supermarket, and it really is just blind faith that food that we partake of is not toxic to us. Some people it is if they're allergic and whatever, and that sort of thing, so they take precautions against it. But by and large, we have a blind faith that whatever we stick down our throats is not going to kill us. Okay, that's a fairly simple fact of life. Appliances that we use aren't going to shock us to death. You know, how many times do we turn the stove or the toaster on? Every day, don't we? That's blind faith, that we just push the button and things are going to happen. Cars driving down here on the other side of the road, it's blind faith that the idiot coming out of the way isn't going to take us out. So we rely on faith, and it's often that blind faith, unthinking faith. There is another faith that was sort of brought to our attention fairly recently, the Flat Earth Society is having a conference in New Zealand as we speak, and it takes a lot of faith to believe in the Flat Earth. Same with evolution, the theory of evolution. It actually takes more faith to believe in the theory of evolution than it does to believe in creation. So we have all these sort of funny things about faith that the world knows about. But what if I was to go nose to nose with you and say, O ye of little faith, how would you feel about that? Okay, just bear that in mind. So I went through Scripture and had a look at the occurrences where those words were used. O ye of little faith. Two, at the lower end of the scale of faith, were things concerning our daily life, food and clothing. Matthew and Luke both speak about if God so clothes the grass, which today is in the field and tomorrow cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Or when Jesus perceived, when the disciples were asking about where we're going to get this bread from, Jesus said to them, O you of little faith. And it seems an odd saying to present to them. What's faith got to do with being clothed? And yeah, maybe a little bit. But for bread on that occasion with feeding the multitude, they didn't know how their faith was supposed to affect whether bread was going to be there or not. There's two more occurrences of this phrase in the natural world that Scripture tells us about. There's the occasion when the disciples are in the boat on the Sea of Galilee and the storm blew up, Jesus asleep in the back of the boat, and when they woke him up, what did he say to them? O you of little faith. We've got to put ourselves in that situation. You know, would we even think about faith in that situation? How do we deal with adversity like that and project our faith into it so that it has a result in our lives. And of course, the one that we're sort of most familiar with was when Peter steps out of the boat. But before that happens, Jesus calls him. But Peter asks the question, Lord, if it's you, then bid me come. So Peter sort of was all geared up, ready to jump out the side of the boat, and then he had this thought, what if it's not the Lord? Okay, I'm in trouble here if I step out of the boat and it's not. So he asked the question, so he's already got the doubt. What's that going to do to his faith? Admittedly, he took a few steps on the water, but it was really the doubt that was implanted in him in the boat before he stepped out that was his undoing. How would we react in that situation? I'm not sure that I would have reacted any differently to Peter. I probably wouldn't have stepped out of the boat. And I'll give you an example, a real life example that we can possibly see in our minds in a minute. Now, faith is something based on belief. Okay, we have to believe that we can do it. Okay, there's an example of the gentleman whose son had epilepsy, and the son was often, the epilepsy often took him into the fire. And the man pleaded with Jesus to heal his son. And in the conversation, he says, Christ says to the guy, if you can believe, in other words, think to be true, all things are possible to him that believes. Okay, this is quite a big thing. Be healed from epilepsy is a big thing to believe. And straight away, the father of the child cried out with tears and said, Lord, I believe. I think I know what is true. Help you my unbelief. And the word is actually closer related to unfaithlessness, or to faithlessness rather than unbelief. So it's the unbelief that drives the faithlessness. There's quite a difference between knowing something is true and actually proving it. We know God is true. How hard is it to prove it to those around us? Likewise, Peter, in the example that we gave of him stepping out of the boat, he thought it was something to be true. Okay, Jesus is doing it, maybe I can too. And in Matthew, Peter says, Lord, if it be you, that doubt. He didn't know. He needed proof. So he was asking Christ to provide the proof. Implicit faith, if he had had faith enough as he stepped out of the boat, he wouldn't have even needed Jesus to have held out his hand and say, come. He would have been able to step out and walk out to him. That's what that level of faith should have been. Or we say it should have been, could have been. Would we be able to do the same? And this is where I can give you an example that you can possibly visualise. If we put somebody up on that stage, me for example, unfortunately I can't at the moment, so I'm not going to make a fool of myself doing it. But it's only a metre off the ground, isn't it? What if I was to stand on the edge of that stage and take a step out? In faith, what would happen? I know what would happen. I'd probably break my other ankle. Okay? My faith isn't at that level. Our faith in end times, and this is sort of where I'm going to direct this exhortation, needs to be at a level that's way above where we're at now. We need to be able to step off that stage and know that we are not going to fall. That's the level of faith that we need to have. You may disagree with me, and it serves no purpose. So that's probably, it's an example so that we can visualize what Peter was going through as he stepped out of his boat. But in end times, our faith is going to have to be so much greater. Take the same scenario of stepping off the stage. We're in a plane at 20,000 feet, and the Lord's outside the door saying, come. And we move to the door, and crikey, it's a long way down. Doubt and kill it for us now. Where's our faith going to be when, and I'm not saying he's going to ask us to step out of the plane at 20,000 feet, but he's going to ask us to test, or he's going to test our faith to a degree far beyond where it's tested now. And Jesus said, speaking to his disciples in Luke, if you had faith as a grain of mustard seed, you might say unto the sycamore, and I think it's really, commentary tells us it's a mulberry tree, be thou plucked up by the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now if we were testing our faith now, fortunately there's not a lot of mulberry trees around, so you can't really use mulberry trees as a test of whether we can tell it to go into the sea or not. The other time something like this is projected by Jesus was in Matthew 17. Once again, comparing faith as large as a grain of mustard seed, smallest of all the seeds. And Jesus said unto them in Matthew 17, because of your unbelief, for verily I say unto you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you shall say to this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove. Let's make that real for us. And I don't mean we're going to tell a mountain to go. But if you thought of Mount Maunganui, and faith is grain of mustard seed, we could tell that mountain to go, and it would remove to yonder place. You see why my brain's been exercised at night thinking about these things. It's quite scary in a way. Our faith has to be at so much higher level. And please, nobody pray that that mountain moves, because we would get ourselves in big trouble probably. Now, faithlessness. We've seen the world and the likes of Christian countries around the world becoming more and more faithless. And we put it in part due to their leadership. We have a prime example in Scripture in Numbers, when the Lord spoke to Moses and told him to send men out and to spy up the land of Canaan. Who were chosen to go and spy up the land? They were one man from each tribe, heads of their households. These were the rulers, the people held in the highest esteem in Israel that went out. Their faith was not enough to lift the people. In fact, their faith, or lack of it, suppressed the faith of the people to the extent that the people said, we'd rather go back to Egypt. We'd rather have died in the wilderness than go into this land. Faithlessness is something that's quite contagious. One person displays faithfulness, I can't do that. The next person is going to say, well, if he can't, I can't. And it's something that we see an awful lot of. Just as a totally aside, but as an example of that, when we were at primary school, we used to play a game called Kinnisini, and I don't know if any of you remember it, but half the school would line up on one side of the field, and the other half of the school would line up on the other side. And the idea was to be last man standing, but you had to cross to get to the other side of the field. So as the groups crossed, they, you'd take out whoever you could, basically. So you usually picked on the little guys first. I was a little guy at that time, but I learned to get really, really fast. So eventually it gets to the stage where you're down to one or two people. And more often than not, because the hits on you were getting harder and harder, it was very tempting to say, oh, I can't do this anymore, and just lie down. And I think our faith is like that sometimes. Life gets so hard, the challenges, the trials get so hard that we say, I can't do this anymore, I'm just going to lie down. Now I think Leon and Helen have experienced a trial of their faith that few of us have. And it's lifted their, and I believe quite strongly, it's lifted their faith to a level that it wasn't at before the trial happened. That's the sort of trial that we are all going to face in varying forms. Okay, this is a, like a preparation exhortation, because there's more to come. Just another quick question, or a quick comment on the discouragement of the children of Israel by those who came back from surveying the land of Canaan and came back from Eshcol. Now, we realise God appoints our leaders. What does that say about the leaders in Israel at the time? Were they God appointed? I think so. So that trial was actually inspired by God. This was a test of Israel which they failed miserably. Okay, would we have done any better in that situation? So what changed to turn them into this faithlessness at that time? Okay, they had been told that they were to go into this land, so they believed it to be true. Something was missing, okay? They had it up here, but they didn't have it in here. So our hearts, our internal, our innermost being is where faith or faithlessness is going to be found. There's a principle in forgiveness that I can use as an example just to describe where my thinking is going on this. And Luke talks about a certain creditor which had two debtors. You know the story. One that owed 500 pence and the other 150. And when they had nothing to pay, the creditor forgave them both. And Christ asked them, which of these will love him the most? And the person replied, to him who forgave most. The same applies to faith. When our trials are small, 50 pence worth, then our faith is going to be small with it. When our trials are larger, the 500 pence worth, then our faith is going to grow to match that. We know that our faith is tried, often in ways we don't expect, out of the blue, and often our faith is tried in areas of our weakness. Are we afraid of something, of someone, of something happening to us in a particular way? Example, Job, family destroyed, everything taken away, and Job said, I feared this was going to happen. Okay, are we like that? Because if we start saying we fear this is going to happen, guess what? That's what our trial is going to be. And from personal experience, I can say that's true. If we're worried about money, money will be the trial. If we're worried about goods and wealth, animals, I've been a farmer, livestock were my income, my livelihood, and that's where I was tried. So wherever we are weak, we are going to be tried. just to make us stronger in that, but to increase our faith as well. So faith is something that is tried. It's put through the fire, that it might be refined, that it might have the doubt which, or the dross taken away. Faith, I think, is belief in action. We know something is true, that's belief. I'm going to go and do that because it's true. That's faith. Think of Abraham. He knew that a great nation would come from him. That was belief. His faith took him up the mountain to offer his son as sacrifice. That's faith. The difference between thinking and doing. We can have different levels of faith, and not everybody is at the same level of faith. Can come from lack of belief or imperfect belief, not fully conversant with a scripture that tells us that we can do these things. And can be at the stage of our walk. I'm sure as we get older, our faith gets stronger unless we succumb. Because we have been tried and we've survived. The trials have gone over us, and we are stronger because of us, because of that. Going through it's not fun. And we think, man, how are we going to make our way through this lot? But we look back on it and say, we did, and now I believe, and now I know we can get through, if it ever happens again or at the next level. So where does that leave us now? Right here, right now. We know we're in near end times. And I think faith, because of the way my thinking's going, and I think possibly what the dream has sort of shown me a little bit, is that faith needs to be an end time quality of ours that needs to be developed. It needs to be probably a more important focus in our walk than what we've made it so far. I'll go into the dream just a little bit here. It's been a recurring dream, and it's been in the context of the saints called to be with Christ. Now, I'm very conscious in the dream that I'm not a spectator to it, that I'm actually with Christ at that time. God willing, I will be. But on the opposite side, on the big valley in front of us, the innumerable host. And I can only think this is the end time event. How much of a test of faith is that going to be, brothers and sisters, when you know that you are so small in number that they could walk over you? They wouldn't need to use any weapons. They could just walk over you. How much faith is it going to take to stand up to a host like that? I put it to you, an awful lot. But the words that I very distinctly heard each time that dream was, "Be still and see the power of God." Okay? And we have an example of that, just to say that, hey, this can happen this way. Moses at the Red Sea in Exodus 14, he said to the people, "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you this day." And he goes on to say, "The Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will see them again no more. The host that we will see on that day, you will see them no more." How do we know that there's enough people on our side to affect this? We know God's on our side. Another example was when Elisha says to the people, says to his servant in 2 Kings, when the servant of the man of God was risen early and had gone forth, a great host, once again, an innumerable host in front of him, compassed the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" And his master, Elisha, answered, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that are with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray you, open his eyes that he may see." And this, we can put ourselves in this. At that end time event, the Lord will open our eyes so that we can see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about. And when the host came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Lord and said, "Smite this people." It's in the context of being still and calm and faithful and knowing God. In the dream, the host just vanished away in front of the saints and in front of Christ. And I believe quite strongly that's how it will happen in that day. An innumerable host will not be able to withstand the power of God. Won't be our power, won't be the saints. We will be there with them to see it. But our faith will be what keeps us there, rather than turning around and running the other way. So in the end time, we are told there are three things that will remain. Faith, which we've talked about. Hope and love. We see those three qualities in the emblems before us. Christ believed. He had the faith to put into action his belief, even to sacrificing himself on the cross. He was able to give us the hope that through his resurrection we can attain unto that resurrection as well. And the overriding factor and the great sense I had, and even in that dream, was one of the love of God for each and every one of us. I hope I've given you something to think about.